Welcome to the Rabbi and the CEO, separating fact from fiction and bubble mices from the bottom line. With your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler of Habata Palm Beach Gardens and CEO Mitch Zachary of Zachary Financial Consultants. Join the conversation through email, rabbi@jewishgardens.com. Watch the show on Facebook Live, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now here are your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line, you're listening to The Schmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants, and I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary and cosmopolitan Jews just like you. Learn about us online at jewishgardens.com. That's www.jewishgardens.com. On the line this morning, we have a fascinating guest. It is the Senator Joe Lieberman himself, live on the line with us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Senator Lieberman. How are you? Shalom.
Shalom, Rabbi. Good to be with you and Mitch. Thank you.
We're deeply honored to have you here with us on the show. A very strong personal family connection. My wife's grandfather is Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky. He's the chairman of the worldwide Chabad movement and a friend of yours. Can you just please, Senator Lieberman, tell us about the connection, your connection to Rabbi Krinsky?
Yeah, well, of course, my connection to Rabbi Krinsky begins with my connection to and devotion to the Lubavitcher Rebbe of blessed memory, who I visited first way back when I was at college, and to be honest, not so from, and there was a man in New Haven also not so from, but a follower of the Rebbe who asked me if I wanted to go to be in Crown Heights with the Rebbe at a Fabrengen on Simchas Torah, and it was an incredible experience. I will never forget it. There was noise, of course, in the room. Suddenly, it stopped, almost like you were in a forest, and the nature knew something was about to happen. And what happened, of course, is that the Rebbe came in and. Really quite a remarkable evening of him talking, learning, teaching, then some singing and dancing, and I suppose that was, you might say, love at first sight.
So I amazing.
And I met Rabbi Krinsky, of course, was the secretary to the Rebbe, and has done as much as anybody, I would say more really, to sustain the remarkable growth of Chabad since the Rebbe's passing. And it's just, I could go on talking about Chabad, but there's no more dynamic organization in the Jewish world, no organization that does more to bring Jews in the spirit of Chavas Yisrael, the love of fellow Jews that the Rebbe himself taught about all the time. So Rabbi Krinsky is a wonderful man. I've turned to him for counsel and advice, and he has really sustained the movement, so may he run really till 120 with God's help.
Senator Lieberman, this is Mitch. I just want to, curious, can you tell our listeners, how has Chabad and the Rebbe influenced you?
Well, in many ways, I mean, look, read the Rebbe's life story is a remarkable story, and it bears telling. He has been part of the world. In other words, he was obviously extremely religious, or you'd say orthodox, but it seems funny even to say it. But he had a passionate interest in what was happening in the world, in science, technology, literature, art. And I think in that he said to me, and should say to everybody, that the Torah and Yiddishkeit is at the center of our lives. It's what our mission is. And yet we can't just carry out that mission by staying in the study hall. We have to, or staying just with the Torah. We have to open our eyes to what's happening in the world around us, to apply the lessons from Mount Sinai to the world around us, and not to be left behind. And Chabad has done that in a remarkable way. I mean, Chabad is a fascinatingly technologically sophisticated movement today in social media, etc., which is, of course, the way to achieve the outreach mission that the Rebbe was committed to. More particularly, I remember, I'm now moving to the world of politics, my own career, when I was first elected, I might have been elected majority leader of the state senate of Connecticut in the 1970s, and either on my own or through one of the leading Chabad families in New Haven, which was the Deitch family, we wrote to the Rebbe to tell him this had happened. I was elected majority leader of the state senate, and to ask for his bracha, and he wrote me back and gave me his bracha, which meant a lot to me, but also gave me the quote from Yirmeyahu, from the prophet Jeremiah, that, you know, I should seek the peace of the city, in my case it was the state that I was in, and in the from the peace of that of our state and the well-being of our state, I and more generally the Jewish people would find their own peace and well-being and freedom. So and that was a charge to go forward. I could go on too long here. When I was fortunate enough to be elected to the Senate, I was flying down on a Sunday from LaGuardia Airport to go to be sworn in. I forgot whether it was Monday or Tuesday in Washington, D.C. as a senator. And with my entire family, I visited the Rebbe on a Sunday afternoon. As you know, he stood there, hundreds lined up to come and just ask for a bracha and get a dollar from him, which was his idea to give the dollar to tzedakah, to charity. And he was really wonderful. He had a word that was so fitting, almost as if he could see through to people's neshamas, their hearts and souls, to every member of my family who was there, my mother, my children, no grandchildren yet at that time, and a couple of cousins. So he was a remarkable person, and thank God leaves us with not only a extraordinary body of his own thinking and learning, teaching, writing, but, you know, through the wonder of modern technology, also on tape, speaking to us still, and always will. So he has played a really important part of my life, as have the Rebbe's representatives, the shluchim, all around the world.
Thank you, Senator. On the line this morning on Shmooz Radio is Senator Joe Lieberman with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens. Thank you, Senator. Again, I have to ask you a very personal perspective here. I've always admired your work, Senator Lieberman, in that I felt that what you've managed to achieve in your career is something that has been achieved by very, very few individuals in the history of Judaism and the history of the world. Your namesake, Joseph, the of the 12 tribes of Israel, was unique amongst the brothers, the tribes of Israel, in that he had the ability to straddle two lanes. He was able to be both a monotheist, a Jew, a believer, a son of Jacob, and at the same time to be the prime minister, the leader of the free world, a brilliant economist and a political leader, without compromising his Jewish identity. The fact that you ran for vice president of the United States of America, the fact that you ran for the second most powerful position in the world without compromising your Jewish observance, your Jewish identity, is something which to me is Joseph-esque, is just extraordinary. And what an inspiration to us American Jews today who speak of being Americanized or anglicizing our names and not sticking out as Jews. How do you feel, and where do you get the courage and the strength to be able to straddle both these lanes?
Well, first, Rabbi, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that. I'm those words, and I'm humbled by them. I've been very lucky. So a lot of what I've been able to achieve really is standing on the shoulders of people who went before me. It happened when I ran for vice president in 2000 that, you know, there are others who had, in their own ways, created a broader acceptance for Jews. But I must say that, well, where does it come from? I mean, it comes from the confidence that I have from my own emunah, from my own faith, that this is who I am, this is what I was meant to be, and I'm going to stick with it, and that's really the guiding mission of my life. In other words, it's my priority. Now, it happened. The second thing I would say in gratitude is my mother and father of blessed memory. They really put into my sisters and me this belief that we were blessed to live in America at a time when you didn't have to choose between being Jewish, identifying as Jewish, observing the Jewish religion, and achieving success in the broader secular community. And you know, it turns out they were right. So I can tell you that from excuse me, when I first ran for the U.S. Senate in 1988, you know, the Jewish population in Connecticut was maybe 2 or 3%. So obviously, they weren't. I wasn't winning because of Jewish votes, but people were very open, accepting, and frankly, in a way that I saw in 1988 and then again to some extent in 2000 when I ran for vice president. In Connecticut, there were a lot of very religious Christians. In Connecticut, mostly Catholics in the country, sort of a broad group of Catholics and Protestants, who would tell me over and over again that they respected the fact that I observed my religion, that I didn't do politics on my Sabbath, that something was more important to me than that, and that was my faith in God and observing the commandments, including the commandment to observe the Sabbath.
So they respected your personal position, your personal faith?
Yeah, I mean, I would tell you that in the end, and it's a funny thing to say, though you're kind enough to call it courageous, in the end, I think being a religiously observant Jew not only did not stand in my way, but it actually, in some sense, helped me in my campaigns.
And
what can you say to that but Baruch Hashem.
Amazing. So just one follow-up to this is Shabbat observance in Congress, in Senate. Does that mean you're walking to Congress? Is that what happens?
Yeah.
I mean, is there a kosher cafeteria there?
So I made a decision, and I was advised by my rabbis. I say rabbis because I had one in Connecticut, one in Washington, and more beyond, and it was my own feeling, too, that I would agree, and I followed this from early in my state Senate career in the 1970s. I would not do specifically political events on Shabbat, a testimonial dinner, a rally, whatever. But if I had a responsibility associated with the office I held, which was state senator, attorney general, a U.S. senator, then I would feel a responsibility to do it. Certainly if it involved Pikuach Nefesh, the protection of well-being, health, the national security, but also more broadly the concept of Tzorchei Tzibor, the betterment of the community. But I would try my hardest to do it without violating the prohibitions of Shabbat. And it really came into conflict most often during my time in the Senate over 24 years. I never counted them, but I would guess 40 times there were Senate votes on Friday night or Saturday that I wouldn't miss because I couldn't delegate my vote to anybody, and therefore the Connecticut people of Connecticut would only have half the representation they deserved if I didn't vote, and that was not fair to them. So I walked. So it was a long walk, and my legs were in good shape in those days, 4.5 miles from Georgetown. But sometimes when I knew that we were not only having votes on Friday night, but also Saturday, my wife and I would move into a hotel on Capitol Hill and, you know, make Shabbos there. And so I'd be in range of going over and voting. So, you know, thank God. And the Senate is a very old-fashioned body. So unlike the House, which votes electronically, which may have created some halachic issues, the Senate still votes by voice. You know, they call your name and you say aye or no. So that wasn't a problem. And anyway, it all worked out well. And it's a classic of if you have the will to do it, you'll find a way to do it.
You know, Senator, this is Mitch again. I just want to just tell you how much to our, I'm the secular part of this radio show.
Okay.
But I just want to tell you how much we secular Jews in America respect what you did. And I'm just curious, I know the world was considerably different, especially in terms of the media and Twitter and everything.
Yeah.
But did you sense any anti-Semitism in your historic run for vice president?
I did not. And that's a very important question. I mean, I'll tell you two things first. The night that we flew to Nashville, Tennessee, in preparation for Vice President Gore to announce the next morning that I was his choice as his vice presidential candidate, he told me a really fascinating story, which is that he had decided about 3 weeks before, 2 weeks before, that I was his first choice, but he felt it was irresponsible not to ask some people whose judgment he respected whether they thought America was ready for a Jewish person, the proverbial heartbeat away from the presidency. And he said the results were fascinating. He said, I spoke to Christians and Jews, not a large group. He said, among Jews, there really was anxiety about what would happen if I had a Jewish person on the ticket or serving with me as vice president. But he said, among the Christians, everybody said it won't be a problem.
Well, that's great.
And then Al Gore joked. He said, so knowing how many millions more Christians there are in America than Jews, I thought I could make the choice that I wanted to make. So I gather that on the Internet, which was much less popular than 17, 18 years ago, but still active, there was a little flurry of anti-Semitism on the Internet, but it faded away. And I was greeted warmly throughout the country. And look, politics is like sports, so it ends up in numbers. You can argue about the numbers, but the truth is that on that ticket in 2000, on which there was the first Jewish person to run for national office, our ticket did get 545,000 more votes than the other ticket. There was that little matter of the Electoral College.
Something with Palm Beach County.
Yeah, we're a little embarrassed about that here in Palm Beach County.
Yeah, and
we haven't gotten over it.
Notwithstanding that, I'm still coming to West Palm Beach this Thursday night to speak at a big APEC meeting, which I love coming to Florida. But anyway, we're blessed, really. I don't think outside of Israel, when it's been a Jewish state, there has ever been a place in the world where Jews have, other than America, where Jews have been given more freedom, more opportunity, more respect, more acceptance, more success than in the United States of America. So really, God bless America.
So just coming back to today's time, Senator,
yeah.
What's your thoughts on this administration's decision to move the embassy to Jerusalem?
Well, I'm very supportive of that decision that President Trump made and very grateful for it. I mean, it happens that in 1995 I was in the Senate and I co-sponsored the bill that mandated that our embassy be moved to Jerusalem and that we recognize Jerusalem, therefore, as the capital of Israel. And I did it because it was the right thing to do. And in this sense, it was the honest thing to do. Jerusalem obviously is the capital of Israel. And in another way, I was doing it really as an American who felt it was outrageous that we were being essentially bullied not to do what we did in every other country in the world, which was to say to the host country, we will locate our embassy in the city you designate as your capital. So how could we justify not doing that in Israel, which is one of our closest allies? And, you know, for a lot of years, there was a waiver, so-called, in the bill. Presidents could waive it in the national security interest, and presidents did since it was made law in the Clinton administration. But really, to give credit where it's due, President Trump cut through all of that. And, you know, I know the Palestinians and others have reacted adversely, but he was pretty clear that this was just the recognition of what's real. Also, we're going to build our embassy in a place in Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, which has been part of the Jewish state of Israel since 1948. So for anybody to argue that our doing that somehow constricts the peace process must have in mind that there'll be no Jews in Jerusalem, or that somehow the lines will be drawn so the Jewish part of Jerusalem is even smaller than it was pre-1967 after 1948. And that's just not going to happen. So a lot of credit, I think, goes to the Trump administration for being honest and courageous.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line, you're listening to The Schmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO. Mitch Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary and sophisticated Jews just like you. Learn about us online at jewishgardens.com. That's www.jewishgardens.com. Our illustrious guest this morning on Schmooze Radio is Senator Joe Lieberman himself, who is speaking about his career and his ability to be a strong supporter of Israel, here in the United States of America as an American Jew. And he's actually coming to Florida, to Palm Beach County, this Thursday for the AIPAC Palm Beach Gala that's taking place this Thursday night at the Kravis Center. We look forward to meeting the senator himself in person. Senator Lieberman, if I could ask you this, as we obviously are noticing a trend where Jewish people are feeling more emboldened in being able to rise to positions of political leadership. Perhaps that has something to do with your inspiration as well. You know, we have, of course, the president's son-in-law who's in the cabinet, sure, and he's right. Shabbat observant as well, and right. keeping kosher. What is a message that you can share with young people today about Jewish people who have political aspirations, who might feel conflicted with wearing a kippah or keeping the kosher? Right. Well, what message can you impart to them from your experience?
Well, the message from my experience really is that you'll never... really, it's the message my parents gave me. But now I can, looking back with a lot of gratitude, I was in elective office for 40 years, 16 in state government and 24 in the U.S. Senate. That you will not have to choose between your religious faith and observance and your secular political ambitions. It doesn't mean you're going to achieve every secular political ambition you have, but you won't not achieve them because you decided to be religious. And that's a tribute to the openness of America, which I still think is there. And it's also a reflection of the fact that the American people remain a religious people who respect others who take their religion seriously. So go for it. Follow your dreams.
What a great line. Americans are a religious people who respect other people who take their religion seriously. And I loved how you said before that you're being an observant Orthodox Jew actually was able to aid your career, your political ambitions, instead of, God forbid, blocking its path. And I just want to mention from a spiritual perspective that as a Jew, we know that we're made up of both body and soul. Every human being has got a piece of God inside of them. And we're made up of physical and spiritual. And it's our obligation to be residents of this world and to light up the world. It's got to be an Or LaGoyim, a light unto the nations, where we can not only engage with the world, but we can actually have a positive influence, a positive impact, to be able to illuminate the world around us. And certainly that's a message which the Rebbe would constantly over and over repeat, to say that there's no conflict between heaven and earth, between our Jewish identity and our nationalities, our American identity. It's really not in conflict. This country was founded upon the principles of religious freedom and the pursuit of happiness. So we certainly shouldn't be shying away. And you certainly, Senator Lieberman, are a living example of a Jew who was willing to keep his head up high and not be intimidated, not be afraid, but to be proud of your identity as a Jew. And I just want to personally thank you for that inspiration. To myself, you know, I found that incredibly inspiring. As I often quote you in my sermons and in my teachings and my writings, I often speak of Senator Joe Lieberman and the shining example that you are to all the people of our generation.
I appreciate that a lot, Rabbi. I was going to say, as you were talking, and I really mean it, you sounded like the Rebbe. So this is the strength of the movement. It's also a lesson to each of us. The Rebbe put in everybody who is actively involved in Chabad a kind of faith and optimism that you could achieve, you could make things better, you could achieve goals, and it reminds each of us that we have that same capacity, that we have the light within us and we can share the light. And as the Rebbe said more than once, one of the great things about light is that when you take a candle and light somebody else's candle, your candle's power does not diminish, but you have spread the light. And that's not only what the opportunity we have, but truthfully, it's the mission we got from Mount Sinai.
Thank you, Senator. We're all ambassadors of light. As a rabbi, I've got a spiritual mission to bring to this world, and as a politician and as a CEO,
Yes. It's
every one of us has a mission to bring spirituality and light into this world.
Senator,
amen.
One final question, then we'll let you go. We really appreciate
Yes. Your
time. What do you think the chances are that there'll ever be a Jewish president in the United States?
Well, I think the chances are good, and what I mean is that a Jewish person running for president will not be stopped from being president because they're Jewish. Now, what then has to happen is that the Jewish person running, is capable, is the right candidate for the time, can get public support, but... there's no question in my mind that is definitely possible, and I look forward with God's help to being here to celebrate when that happens.
Senator, I've got to ask you one final fact check, if I may.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stories of something that happened to you. I need to hear it from the man himself. So the story goes that at the time of that election, when you were running for vice president, you were, of course, you know, when the news came out that your team had not won the election, the story goes that you came home that night and you were a little down, a little depressed, you know. Of course, your wife, Hadassah, she asks you, Joe, why are you upset? Why are you disappointed? So of course, you answer. You say, I'm not going to be the vice president of the United States. So the legend goes that Hadassah responds to you and she says, Vice President, Schmeiss President. In this house, you'll always be the vice president. One of my favorite stories.
It's a great story. I've told it many times.
Oh, it is? Okay. Oh, you said the story.
I want to leave it there because it's better not to say too much.
So,
anyway, it certainly captures the spirit of the wonderful relationship I have with my wife. So,
we'll certainly
anyway,
behind
great to
every...
be with you all. I hope I see you and a lot of other people at the Kravis Center this Thursday, which I think the program begins around 7:30.
At the Kravis Center, it's right here in Palm Beach County, in West Palm Beach. The APAC Gala is on Thursday night. Senator Lieberman, we just want to thank you so very, very much for taking the time.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Have a great day.
Shalom and have a wonderful day.
Are you confused or just plain bored by the new tax laws? The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants have studied every line of the 1,000-page bill and know all the ways that you can benefit from it, as well as all of the hidden traps you need to avoid. If you're a business owner, you may be able to save tens of thousands of dollars in taxes. But in order to take advantage of them, you may have to make some changes. The professionals at Zachary Financial Consultants can easily guide you through these muddy waters. Having over 37 years of financial experience, the staff at Zachary Financial Consultants include CPAs, certified financial planners, and attorneys. They regularly assist their clients in making sure they're maximizing their after-tax investment performance, that their families are adequately protected in case of a catastrophe, and in providing a customized financial plan which they help to implement and monitor. At Zachary Financial Consultants, every client is treated with personalized care as if they were part of the family. You can speak directly with the CEO, Mitch Zachary, at 561-508-8446, or email him at mzachary@zacharyfinancial.com. They are conveniently located in Palm Beach Gardens and they offer free consultations. That's Zachary Financial Consultants, 561-508-8446.
They say that caring for the elderly is a profession of the heart. As the director of home health care at Morse Life, I know that to be true. When I see an older person feeling safe and secure at home, I know I've done my job. To make a difference, to show compassion, dignity, and respect, it's not just our job, it's our mission.
Morse Life Home Healthcare.
Morse Life Health System, honoring senior living.
Call 561-471-5111 or visit morselife.org.
Welcome back to The Rabbi and the CEO. Watch the show live on Facebook, facebook.com/gardensrabbi. Now, back to your hosts, Rabbi David Vigler and CEO Mitch Zachary.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. Good morning and welcome back to the Schmooze. Wow, what an interview.
That was something. I'm impressed. Rabbi, I got to say, you did a great job. Your joke at the end was very funny.
I took a little
I've
guts,
heard it
you know?
Before, but still, it was pretty
no,
good.
No, but to say the joke to the man himself, you know?
I know, right?
Turns out that he himself actually said the joke, which is really funny. I mean, he apparently was the origin of the joke. So there's nothing like saying a story to the guy who made the story up in the first place.
That you was know, a great
I've had such a similar experience once before. It didn't end too well, but this went pretty well.
That was a great interview. We have, he's a good sport. He's a really good sport.
Yeah.
And I learned so much of it. We have a great guest coming on right now with an incredible narrative.
There's a sports game today, no?
Yeah.
What is it, baseball? What are you doing today? Soccer?
Small game.
So what we're going to have on very shortly is Adam Weingrad. He was a
Super Bowl
offensive
champion.
Tackle and actually won a Super Bowl, and he's Jewish.
From Super Bowl to Super Jew.
Which our producer, Steve Lappa, had to do a lot of work to find the Jewish player on a Super Bowl winning team, and we congratulate you for coming up with it.
That's your car.
I just really wanted to make one quick comment to our listeners, okay? On Friday, the stock market took a tumble, and I'm taking my role as CEO right now of a financial advisory group.
Okay.
And I'm getting calls and emails and texts about, oh my God, the stock market had a bad day. And I just want to reassure all of our listeners, okay? The stock market will not go up every day. I can promise you that. I've been investing for well over 30 years. The stock market will have its bad days. And it will have its bad periods.
Collectively, it's up like 2,000 points.
Right. But the most important lesson for everybody is always have a portfolio that makes sense for you. Have the right allocation between stocks and bonds. And stocks being more aggressive, bonds being more conservative. If you ever get nervous, switch your allocation a little bit from stocks to bonds. And that may be a good idea for people who have had tremendous profit in stocks, and maybe they have too much stocks and too little bonds. So maybe now is a good time to rebalance your portfolio. Do not get scared and get out of the market.
Mitch,
that would be the worst thing.
Maybe isn't it a time to buy? If the stock's tumbled.
Rabbi, don't ever... My major advice to everybody is don't ever try to time the market. You don't ever know. You may buy, you may go, oh, great time, and it still goes down, and it still goes down. So my best advice to everybody is don't get nervous. If necessary, just tweak your portfolio a little bit, make it a little less aggressive, perhaps, and you'll be fine. And that's all for my financial advice today.
Separating the facts from the fiction and the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. You're listening to The Schmooze with the Rabbi and the CEO, Mitch Zachary of Zachary Financial Consultants, sharing with us insights into the potential panic on Friday's stock market. Don't panic, he says. It's the name of the game. This is how things roll. But I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. And today is Super Bowl Sunday. It is the number one most watched sport in the United States of America. Not in the world, however, but in the United States of America, where the entire country is glued to the television screens. Our son is having his upshernish's 3-year-old haircutting ceremony. We were thinking for months, should it be Sunday night? Should it be Monday night? Until we finally realized, oh, it's Super Bowl. Forget about it. Nothing to talk about. We're doing the party tomorrow. Our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio Studios is Super Bowl champion from the Green Bay Packers, as well as the Dallas Cowboys. That is Alan Shlomo Weingrad on the line. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. Excellent. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, thank God. And I'm so inspired to be talking to a real Jewish Super Bowl champ. Wow.
Alan, listen, before we get to your narrative, I just got to ask you, when you were playing, were there more Jewish players or owners?
Owners, you know, in the NFL, they only allow five Jews in the league every year. You do the math. There's only
but
five
once said they're all wearing keepers. What are those heavy helmet keepers? That's what they are, no? Skull caps.
Yeah, right.
So Alan, listen, I read in the New York Times, an old New York Times article about you. What an incredible narrative. If you could please tell our listeners about yourself and how you came to Chabad, what an incredible story.
Thank you. Yes, yes. You know, you retire from the National Football League and the Dallas Cowboys and a Super Bowl victory. What else is there to do in life? You think you've reached the pinnacle, the greatest achievement that anybody or most people would want to accomplish. The cheering stops, the coaching stops, you know, no more itinerary, no more schedule, no more teammates, no more locker room. You know, what now? So I went through, like I would say most players, you know, searching. You're searching and you're looking. It's like, how do you get that high? Because you can't get that high anywhere. And, you know, fortunately, a few years after I retired, my cousin, an observant Jew, lives in Miami Beach, invited me to his home for Shabbos. And at that Shabbos meal, he asked me, he said, would you go to one Torah class? And my answer wanted to be no, but I just got done eating his entire Shabbos table. I didn't eat the kids, but his wife made, you know, everything gourmet, homemade challah. Because I've never had a homemade challah. Talk to Rabbi Ziegler. I'm sure his wife would be happy to make you a homemade challah.
But once as she does, that, as she does.
You know, I know the program. I've been to hundreds of Chabad houses around the world over the years, and I've sampled, I shouldn't say sampled, I devoured many Shabbos tables. But with that being said, though, he said, why don't you go to a Torah class? I went to one Torah class, and it really opened my eyes up to meaning and purpose in life. And I'm on a journey, like everybody. And it's just been an incredible journey to reconnect with, you know, with the traditions and the heritage of the Jewish people.
And so, but can you tell us, so that's how it started. I read something in the New York Times article about somebody leaving
a note.
There was a note.
Somebody left a note
in your locker or something.
In your locker. And that apparently started
up
a journey.
Yeah, listen, I'm on the Green Bay Packers. Maybe 6-7 weeks, and my rookie season with the Packers, just as it turns out, right place at the right time, the right starting tackle was holding out for a larger contract. Packers are getting frustrated with this guy holding out for a bigger deal. The backup of that guy retires. Wow. And all of a sudden, the Packers in a situation.
Because you were undrafted, right?
Yeah, I was a free agent. Cut the season before by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and back then the Houston Oilers. So now I find myself on the Green Bay Packers. Opening day, you know, training camp starting.
Wow.
Go on to start 4 preseason games. And after the 4th preseason game, it's announced I make the team and Vineyard schedules to start opening day. I go into the locker room. I made the team. I am so, so excited to be a Green Bay Packer, let alone starting, you know, in 5 or 6 days. And in my locker is a note from the team secretary to me to call Lou Weinstein. Now, I don't know Lou Weinstein, but I grew up in Miami, Florida, from, you know, via New York. I know the word, the name Weinstein is a Jew.
Usually speaking, yeah.
Jews. I'm sorry?
Generally speaking, yes, that would be the assumption you could make.
Yes, but Lou Weinstein, what does this guy want from me? Why is he calling me? Local Green Bay number. But I knew I had to give him a call. Hello, Lou, how are you? Alan Vine with the Packers. Alan, we need to sit down and have lunch. Lou, what are we going to have lunch about? We have business to discuss. I go, what kind of business? I'm 23 years old. I have $10 in my pocket. The Packers haven't paid me a penny yet. I haven't even played, you know, any regular season games yet. And Lou and I sit down and we have lunch, and he asks me a couple of questions. Where are you living? I tell him in a motel. He goes, that's not going to work. So he goes out with his wife and his realtor, and they find me a one-bedroom apartment furnished a mile or two from Lambeau Field. Secondly, he says to me, do you know anything about money? I say, no. And he says, well, perhaps you want to make me a money manager today, and you'll start investing your money so when you start getting those checks, 90% goes away, and you can keep 10%, you know, for your living expenses.
Good advice. Very good advice.
And then the third thing, he says, what are you doing for Rosh Hashanah? I said, for what? He said, Rosh Hashanah, it's 2 weeks from today. And I know it's on a Tuesday, and I know that's your day off, which is typical in the National Football League on a regular week. And he goes, I'll assume you're coming to synagogue with me and my family. Now, I was distant. I was bar mitzvahed. And at the bar mitzvah, unfortunately, for most American Jews, it's the exit out of Judaism.
We talk about that all the time.
Graduation ceremony.
Never see a shul again.
Exactly. That was the exit for me and my brother. But 10 years, almost 10 years later, I'm sitting in front of this guy, Lou Weinstein, who just took care of my living arrangements, my financial arrangements, and now he asked me to go to synagogue. And of course, I went to synagogue with him and his family, and we became very, very good friends. And I always had I had family in Green Bay, Wisconsin, right then and there.
That's an incredible story. It's really very touching to hear. Now, what about the Yom Kippur? Wasn't there a game scheduled for that Yom Kippur?
No. The Packers. Listen. The Cowboys. They do play. And the Packers. They're immense like organization. They would never play in Yom Kippur. The Packers are an amazing organization.
That's amazing. So on the line, you're listening to the Shmooze here with the Rabbi and the CEO, Mitch Zachary, CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigler of Chabad Palm Beach Gardens, where you'll find traditional Jewish values for contemporary Jews just like you. Learn about us online at www.jewishgardens.com. That's jewishgardens.com, with an incredible plethora of activities coming up in the community. On the line, we have, in honor of Super Bowl Sunday, we have Super Bowl champion player of the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers, together with the Dallas Cowboys in 1992, Alan Shlomo Weingrad won the Super Bowl in 1992. That's unbelievable. And he's one of our boys. I mean, this is a guy that's
member of the tribe.
But he's transformed the stereotypical Jew who's like this weakling.
Bookish,
you know, glasses, doesn't want to, doesn't see the light of day, white skin.
No athletic ability whatsoever.
Around. He's like 8 feet tall, giant, like a bouncer Jew.
Wait. That stereotype's a little bit much. Hang on there.
How did this happen, Alan? What inspired you to become a Super Bowl player? I mean, did you like wake up one day and say, I want to win the Super Bowl? Like, how did this happen?
Well, I think there's really two short stories regarding that. You know, as a little kid, I had a brother 2 years older, and he was a wild guy. And at the age of 6 and 8, my dad realized the fighting in the house, breaking the chandeliers, the lamps, and just destroying the house.
He had an animal.
My dad was smart enough to know, let me buy a footballs and helmets and shoulder pads and get these kids out of the house.
That's cute.
Is that the definition of Ildachaya? Is that how that works?
no question about that. But we both started playing football at a very young age, and our mother would always tell us as kids and teenagers, hey, but when you grow up, you got to be a professional. You need to be a professional. But she didn't finish the sentence. She didn't reach a doctor, lawyer, CPA. So my brother becomes a professional police officer in Miami, 30-plus years in Miami-Dade Police Department. And I thought, I'll become a professional football player. But
got to be specific.
All kidding aside, I never dreamt I'd play in the National Football League. I could never dream that big. And, I'm in Dallas here today. I came up for the weekend to really pay respects to my college football coach. Lived 91, touched the lives of so many players and people around him. And it was the coach, Ernest Hawkins, that said to me at the end of my sophomore season, and I was just starting to develop myself, 6'4". Maybe 240, playing offensive line for East Texas State University. He said, Alan, what are your goals, dreams, and desires? And I'm like, goals? I got goals, coach. I want to be the team captain. I want to be all conference. I want to be all American. I want to play every single game next season. And he says, wow, that's really great. Then he looked at me and said, what about the National Football League? I'm 19 years old. I just got done starting 11 games or 10 games for East Texas State University,
which is Division II. Right, that's not even like a major school.
No, right. Division II, not a major school. However, a very competitive football program here in the state of Texas, which is second to religion, no question about that.
And not our religion. Not our religion.
No, of course not. But he said to me, you might want to start thinking about the National Football League because you've been here 2 years and you've really developed yourself. And if you stay on that track and you keep working and training and eating and grinding it out, you're going to the National Football League. Life changed that day.
Wow. Nice.
Listen, Alan, before we get on into what you're doing now, I have to ask, between going to college in East Texas, playing in the NFL, did you have to face any anti-Semitism?
know, I get that question all the time, and people are really surprised to hear the answer. I spent 5 years at East Texas State University. Today, the name of the university is Texas A&M at Commerce. Mm-hmm. They changed the name 10, 12 years ago. I never experienced anti-Semitism. You got to understand, East Texas State or Texas A&M at Commerce is located in the Bible Belt of the United States of America.
Right.
These are good Christian Bible people.
Yeah.
And when they found out I was Jewish, it was more around
reverence.
What does it mean to be Jewish? Well, you know, and I didn't have a lot of answers for them. Why did Jews eat matzah? Why did Jews, you know, fast on Yom Kippur? Why did Jews do this and why did Jews do that? Because these are people that, you know, they believed in God and they would and they studied it. Many of my teammates and classmates were Christians and they were interested in Alan Weiner, the only Jew they ever met. Same thing in the National.
They weren't looking
League.
For horns.
However,
they weren't looking for your horns.
They were never looking for the horns, but in the NFL, it was very different, though, because in the NFL, most of my teammates never really had a Jew on their football team in college or other NFL teams, but they knew about the Jewish people because their sports agents and their financial planners and their doctors were all Jews. And so they used to tell me, hey, you know, my agent's Jewish. Hey, my lawyer's Jewish. What is with your people? Why are your people so focused on success and education? I said, because that's the focus of the Jewish people. So they did have a lot of respect. And over the years, they would call me the chosen one.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's not amazing. Anti-Semitic. I don't think that's anti-Semitic at all.
Alan Shlomo
Weingrad.
Alan Shlomo
Weingrad
is
that.
Our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio. He is a Super Bowl champion from 1992. And he played for the Dallas Cowboys, 1992 winning team of the Super Bowl in 1992. Alan Shlomo Weingrad is our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio on Super Bowl Sunday. Alan, who's going to win today?
Who do I like today?
Yeah, who do you like?
Who do you think is going to win?
Oh, man, you know, that's like such a difficult question. You can't bet against Brady and Belichick. You can't. You
right.
cannot do it. Don't
That's
do it.
Too good.
I read there's a lot of money
minutes.
On the Eagles now. A lot of money going on the Eagles.
A lot of money going on the Eagles. Listen, I'm rooting for the Eagles, and I know all the Dallas Cowboys fans are out there saying, how could buying the ex Dallas Cowboys vote? You know, root for the Eagles. I'm rooting for the Eagles for really one, well, two reasons. One, I would love to see, you know, the Eagles win, a new team, you know, winning the Super Bowl.
Right.
But, hey, look, the head football coach is a former Green Bay Packer, Doug Peterson. So I'm rooting for, you know, my ex
buddy.
Green Bay Packer guy there.
So Alan, the question is like this. I just want to ask you, you know, as you're our guest this morning on Shmooze Radio, we just completed an interview with Senator Joe Lieberman, who also is an incredible personality, just like you, in the sense that he's been able to calibrate, to straddle both lanes, where he can be both a worldwide famous household name together with being a proud Jew. So what Joe Lieberman did in the political field, you've done on the football field. And I just wanted to ask you, what is it that beyond the challah, beyond the guy that found you the apartment and invited you for Rosh Hashanah, what was the message of Judaism that inspired you to really change your life so much? You made such a dramatic change to start keeping Shabbos and kosher. Was there some defining moment, a teaching, a message that you can share with us?
You know something, the first Torah class I went to was in a, I don't know if the house was worth $6 million or $8 million. It was, you know, somebody who would host a rabbi when I was, you know, when I was living in Weston a couple of years after I retired. You know, we moved to Weston, Florida. I retired, bought a really nice home, married to a Jewish woman, just had our first child. Life was grand, right? Lifting weights a little bit, doing a little martial arts, bike riding, playing golf. I had it all. Everybody ever wanted. And I go to one Torah class in this massive, massive home, some blocks away from my home. I mean, a house of all houses. And I'm sitting in this particular house, five or six men sitting on one couch, and there was six or seven ladies sitting on another couch. And in the middle of the room was a bowl full of cookies. So I sat right next to the cookies. And Rabbi Gruenstein of the Young Israel of Bell Harbor is giving this Torah class. And he was talking about the Jewish people wandering in the desert. And I go, I remember that story. It was long. It was a long story. It was a boring story. And I said, I'm not going to listen to this. It was back when I was, 11 or 12. I remember learning a little bit before my bar mitzvah. And he's going on and on about the Jewish people wanting for the desert. So I turned him off in my head.
Interesting.
And I started thinking about the materialism, and I started thinking about the beauty in this house. And as the rabbi is speaking on this one-hour Torah class, I look behind him, and I see the sun dropping into the lake. And I realize right then and there that I'm going to play a game as the rabbi is going on and on and on, that I'm going to pretend it's my home. And I would fight all my old teammates, and I would invite all the players I played against and all the players I played with, and we would party NFL style in my beautiful home. And I'm envisioning this, and I got a rowboat and a kayak, and I got motorboats, and I got jet skis, and I got a guy in the back cooking gigantic steaks and ribs, and we're partying it up NFL style. And the rabbi looks me right in the eye at the end of the class, as its class is ending, and he says, if you focus your life on materialism, you'll never have any meaning and purpose in life. The class ends. My jaw hits the floor thinking Gruenstein's now a mind reader.
Wow.
And I felt right then and there, you know what? You're focused on the wrong things. So I started to dive into it, and I was fascinated about the laws of Lashon Hara, speaking against somebody. It's so easy to do, but how devastating it is. And that really drove me and inspired me to not only did I want everything I can get out of my body on the football field, I want everything I can get out of myself in everyday life.
Wow, that's quite a story you got there. You know, the mind-reading rabbi. That's quite something. Some things are just beshert, they're meant to be.
I want to thank you so much for your time. I have one final question for you, though. Is there any moment that sticks out for you in your time playing in the NFL as one of the most memorable?
You know, there are, I'm sure, hundreds, but there's one. And when I left East Texas State after playing there for 4 years, I signed as a free agent, not drafted, to go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 6'5", 270 pounds, 4'9", and a 40-yard dash, 450-pound bench press, 30-inch vertical jump. And you guys are probably thinking, wow, this guy's got it going on.
Yeah.
They kept me for 11 days in training camp. They cut me. Ugh. You're not good enough, kid.
Wow.
I go home for 24 hours, and I got picked up off the waiver wire to go play now with the Houston Oilers. I go to Houston, 3 weeks in their training camp. They told me the same thing. You are not good enough.
Ooh.
You fast forwarded to that spring where I signed a free agent contract with the Packers, and my opening start was against the Houston Oilers.
Oh, that must have been great.
Year.
Revenge is sweet.
Absolutely. So for me, running out of the tunnel, Lambeau Field, getting that nod after people said you're not good enough, so long as you keep trying, you keep moving forward, there's always an opportunity.
Wow, that's a great inspirational message there, Alan. Shlomo Weingrad, Super Bowl champion from 1992 with the Dallas Cowboys, is that don't listen to the naysayers. Don't listen to those that tell you that you're not good enough. If you've got a will, you've got a way. Alan Shlomo Weingrad, thank you so very, very much for joining us here this morning. We're so grateful for you taking the time. You're in Texas, you said, right?
I'm in Texas, getting ready to board a plane to head home.
It must be early in the morning by there in Texas. Thank you so much, Alan Shlomo Weingrad. We really, really are grateful for your time. Thank you for being an inspiration, not only to us as Americans, but to us as American Jews as well. We're very grateful, and safe travels. God willing, see you soon, Alan.
All right, be well. Thanks so much, guys. Have a great day.
Shalom. Okay. Separating the facts from the fiction, the Bubba Mises from the bottom line. You're listening to The Shmooze with the rabbi and the CEO. Mick Zachary is the CEO of Zachary Financial Consultants. I'm Rabbi David Vigla of Chabad Palm Beach Gardens. And there's a lot going on in Chabad Palm Beach Gardens. Let me tell you, we have our adult education course we're teaching right now at the JCC, the Mandel JCC in Palm Beach Gardens. It's all about communication, Mitch. This last week, we spoke about how dangerous text messaging can be to your relationships.
Really?
It's amazing. I mean, people came in there with a little bit apprehensive, coming into a course with the title The Art and Soul of Communication. But when you extract the message from the Torah and you're able to show how the Torah actually has universal foundational principles that can be applied to modern platforms like Facebook, email, and text messaging, you realize that text messaging is actually toxic when it comes to certain communications which need to be verbal. It's a fascinating concept. This is a course that's going on at the JCC right now on Tuesdays at 4:30 p.m. You can learn more about it at jewishgardens.com/RSVP. But even more exciting, Mitch, is the 10 wounded Israeli soldiers that we are bringing to Palm Beach Gardens. You know about the program, Mitch?
Yes, it's going to be a tearjerker. Bring tissues if you come.
Bring tissues. February 23rd through February 26th. It's a Friday through Tuesday at the end of February. We will be bringing 10 wounded Israeli soldiers here to Palm Beach Gardens in order to show them that we appreciate their sacrifice. Whilst the world media might condemn them as terrorists or, God forbid, any other vile accusations that they might be lobbied at them, we in Palm Beach Gardens stand and salute the brave young men and women of the Israel Defense Forces who have sacrificed limb and life in some cases, to salute them and to say thank you for standing on the borders of the most dangerous territories in the world. That's coming up on February 23rd through February 26th here at the Palm Beach Gardens Chabad, where we're bringing these 10 wounded soldiers. To get more involved, send me an email to rabbi@jewishgardens.com. That's rabbi@jewishgardens.com. We'd love to get you involved. And finally, our gala, our annual gala, celebrating an evening of celebration, celebrating this incredible community that's sprung out of nothing, risen from totally nothing. 11 years ago, the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens is celebrating an evening of achievement and accomplishment on February 18th. We'd love to have you join us. If you enjoy the radio show, if this is something which you connect with, then we would really appreciate your coming and showing your support for an evening of celebration at the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens on February 18th, Sunday night, with celebrity comedian Elon Gold. This guy is so hysterically funny. Just last night, I was at a cocktail party at someone's home in a country club, and he was saying to me, "Elon Gold, the guy from television? No way I will be there. This guy is so funny. His impersonations, his very original joke material. The guy's so funny. He's actually going to be our guest on the show. Is it next Sunday?
Next Sunday he'll be our guest.
Yeah. Next Sunday, Elon Gold will be giving us a preview of the February 18th gala where he is headlining it. And we would love to have you there. If you listen to Shmooze Radio, if you enjoy the show, then this is your opportunity to show your gratitude, to show your support to the Chabad of Palm Beach Gardens, which makes this show possible. Out there, you're listening. Nobody knows that you're listening. And you're just enjoying it, we would really appreciate your support to be able to make this happen. We run on your support, and that would be at jewishgardens.com/gala. That's www.jewishgardens.com/gala, where you can show your support by either attending or sending in your contribution, or you can just call in at 561-624-2223. That's 561-624-2223. An easy way to remember the phone number is 561-6-CHABAD. 5616 Chabad. Mitch, you think people know how to spell Chabad?
No. They don't even know how to pronounce it. I don't know how to spell it.
Chabad.
Chabad.
Chabad. Like Chabad. Like Chabad. Like Chanukah. They can say Chanukah. Nobody says Chanukah. Seriously, Mitch. Come on.
Okay.
I convinced them. 5616 Chabad, or Chabad if you... Chabad like Hanukkah. 561-624-2223, or online at jewishgardens.com/gala. We would love to see you there. Shalom, and have a wonderful, wonderful week.